like to remind you, if you'd like to come up and ask your questions, maybe line up towards this way. And if you could give your name and be brief with your question, please. We're here to hear Kevin today. And so if you could keep your questions succinct and give Kevin a chance to explain his views. If you were interested in Kevin's topic, and I'm sure most of you were, his book on Democracy Derailed is available for sale just outside the door. So that'll be available after the session today. And now I'd like to invite you to participate in question period. So our first questioner is...
Howard Forsyth. I'm going to ask a question that nobody else would think of. In the 1920s, anybody remember the 1920s? We had a hard time in Alberta. Dad was in the hospital once when I was in the teens, and I had to run a six-quarter section farm. We weren't getting money for wheat, we weren't getting money for hogs, we weren't getting money for cream. You didn't know that. You think that... Now, the question is, and nobody seems to think of this, half of you said a beautiful bunch of stuff.
Thank you.
But every once in a while you can say, just think of a time when maybe Alberta doesn't have every damn thing, excuse me, and the other provinces are asked to help them out. The provinces that take the heck with you. Throw that in occasionally. Just think of it.
Okay. Thank you, Howard. I mean, there... We would be foolish to think that if we don't manage our wealth, that it'll be there forever. It won't be. And that's why it's so important for us as Albertans to seize the moment while we have it and to manage this period well. Because if we don't, it'll be gone. And nobody's going to feel sorry for us, I can tell you that.
Did the policy towards improving our possibility of building up the Heritage Fund by increasing the royalties on our oil and gas?
Okay, there's two points there. What's the Liberal policy on building up the Heritage Fund? And I talked about that a little bit. And the other is more about royalties. Is that the... Okay, well, our policy on royalties is... a full and open review of royalties. It's pretty clear on the oil sands, and there are many different kinds of royalties, so that's why it's a little bit of a complicated question. There's a different royalty structure on natural gas and on oil, on conventional oil, old gas, new gas. It's a complicated issue. The royalty that most people think about is the oil sands royalty, the 1%. How many of you heard of the 1% royalty on oil sands? And then it goes up to 25% of net. That was brought in to stimulate growth of the oil sands. It's hard to believe, but 10 or 12 years ago, you could count the number of housing starts in Fort McMurray on two hands in a year. It was absolutely flat. This royalty regime was brought in to stimulate investment. Wow, did it ever succeed? We have to review it. We need to make sure the people of Alberta are getting a fair share. An economist will tell you that the owners of a resource typically should get maybe 30% in a royalty. We're nowhere close to that in Alberta. We're actually, if you take all the royalties together, at I think about 18% or something. So pretty clearly, we need to look at ways of increasing the revenues from the royalties, yes. And I suspect where we'll end up, at least if it was an Alberta Liberal government, my hunch, and this is not our policy, because as I say, it's a very technical area, but it seems a price trigger approach to royalties is the way to go, and so that the royalty increases as the price goes up. So it's a higher royalty at $60 a barrel than it is at $30 a barrel. But there's no question, the review of royalties, a full and open and fair review of royalties, is overdue.
Four quick questions. What's the population of Norway? What type of investments do they have? And what type of investments would you make? I'm thinking you don't want to just put it in the bank to draw interest. You want to share General Motors, TransDelta, a bank, etc. That would be my thinking anyway. They're just talking about royalties. Do you think what we've been getting is fair? I think I know your answer. Mm-hmm. And how much royalty does Norway take off of their resources? Thank you.
I wish I was Norwegian. I think the population of Norway is about 4.5 million. Is that? Somebody correct me in there? Pretty close. So, and Alberta is about 3.2 million. So they're both relatively small populations. Both jurisdictions produce a similar value, total value of petroleum products, but it's a very different mix. And so Norway depends on North Sea production, where you can drill, very expensive to drill, but you get huge production from individual platforms. Alberta's conventional oil is hundreds of thousands of small wells, and then the oil sands. Anyway, so I'm careful about comparing the two. Norway's taken a totally different strategy than Alberta. If Alberta's had a strategy, it's been spend the money. Norway has actually kept their taxes very high. And they take all of their oil and gas revenues and they save all of them. So they don't use any of it to directly subsidize their budgets, as I understand it. At the end of the year, they make some corrections. They draw some down, but essentially, they take all the revenues and put it into what they call the petroleum fund. And that fund now is worth, as I said earlier, about 250 billion US dollars, as opposed to the Heritage Fund, which is, even after it's been topped up in the last year, about 15 billion Canadian. So it's basically 20 times more money in the Alaskan fund, or the Norwegian fund, as the Alberta fund. But they are taxed much higher. Norway is a high tax jurisdiction, and that's one of the trade-offs they've made. Oh yeah, you asked about investments. If you look at investments, clearly putting in an endowment fund in the bank is not smart. If you look at a well-managed endowment fund, a prudent rule of thumb is that you can earn, after accounting for inflation, 5% a year. I think you can actually do better than that, and there are any number of major endowment funds in the States that do far better than that. You'd want to have a broad base of investments. I mean, this is a public policy debate. One argument would be you invest back in Alberta. The counter-argument, which is what I lean towards, is you want to invest away from Alberta to diversify the risks. Did that help you a little bit? Okay. Hi. How are you?
I have two questions for you. One is both related to liberal policy. One is there is a huge wealth gap in our boom province. Mm-hmm. Alberta being open to business doesn't necessarily mean that the poorest Albertans get a chance. So I noticed that in your talk, you're talking quite a bit about social justice, social issues. Many of the people who take care of the most fragile people in our culture, such as those with disabilities, those who are aging, our youth, they are paid the least, and usually these are women.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd like to know, how would the Liberal Party address this wealth disparity? And the other question is, diversification of the economy has been a big issue since we moved here 29 years ago, but it's not happened. What it would be the Liberal plan for diversifying the Alberta economy?
Okay, two very good and totally different questions. On poverty and the wage gap, I mean, it's a huge issue. We came out about a month ago, for example, with a child care policy aimed at expanding child care in this province. And part of that included the proposal to supplement the wages, to increase the wages of people working in childcare and daycare facilities. So you can address it head on. You can address it by raising the minimum wage. You can address it in a host of other ways. Alberta, and this is the kind of thing that just makes me angry. Alberta is the only province in Canada that doesn't put 2 cents of provincial money into school nutrition programs, school meal programs. Every day in Alberta, and it's hard to believe, but this is the truth. Every day in this province, thousands of kids go to school hungry because there isn't enough food at home, because mom and dad, maybe the family's dysfunctional, maybe they're working on minimum wage or whatever. Thousands of kids go to school hungry every day, and this province won't put 2 cents into school nutrition programs, even though there's overwhelming evidence that it makes a huge difference to those children's performance in schools. That's unacceptable. That's just that's shocking to me that we do that sort of thing in Alberta. So the disparity it's a real concern. The health eliminating healthcare premiums is a big break for lower and middle income families. There's a whole bunch of things that have to be attended to. On the diversification side, very, very big challenge. One of the ways of diversifying the risk, as I mentioned earlier, is to simply save some of our wealth and invest it in the Heritage Fund so that when revenues drop, we have investments to lean on. How many of you have heard of the so-called Dutch disease? Probably not that many. I don't know if any of you are Dutch. It doesn't mean you have a disease or anything. But in the 70s, there was tremendous natural gas found off of the coast of Holland in the North Sea. And this was all great for a little while. But what they found is actually it totally distorted their economy. The value of the Dutch currency soared, making all other Dutch exports uncompetitive. People couldn't hire into other sectors. It's exactly the kind of thing that's going here in Alberta. So one way is to attend to the basics, which is just to slow down some of the other development a little bit and make other businesses more feasible. Do we want to get into picking winners and losers? I don't. I really think we tried that and proved that was wrong. So I would not support a government directly investing in a magnesium plant or a meatpacking plant or all those things that this government did. That was a mistake, and we should learn from that. I hope that helps you a little bit.
Zane Bruins, and my question is, first of all, I have friends up in Calgary who are coming out of high school and have been out of high school who are very smart and able to attend university and college, but are unable to do that, not because of their grades, but because the only housing abilities that they can afford are a two-hour bus ride away from the colleges and the universities, and they are unable to have jobs because they have no time because they're riding a bus so much. So what would the Liberal policies be on such high housing costs?
Well, we just rolled out our affordable housing policy. One of the things that we're doing is rolling out a series of our own policies so that people see that they have a constructive alternative. We don't want to just be the critics. That's an important part of our job. But the other important part is being the constructive alternative. So, Zane, we came out with an affordable housing policy probably about 6 weeks ago. Some of its features include limiting rent increases, for example, to once a year in truly overheated situations, actually limiting the scale of the increase to a maximum of 10%, kind of a cap on rent increases. But the fundamental solution is to stimulate more supply. So we proposed subsidies or support for developers building affordable housing. We proposed supports to people who convert their basement suite or their a granny suite of some kind, as they're called, for students, for example. So a $5,000 grant to people who are prepared to renovate their home to a proper rental facility in the basement or nearby, of course, under municipal controls. There's a whole range of things, but we need to address this issue head on. I was in Grand Prairie 3 or 4 weeks ago, and we had a town hall meeting, and I thought, I wasn't sure what issues would come up, but the one issue that came up at the beginning, and I couldn't get anybody off of it, was affordable housing. There are people in the north who are living for months in a truck, in the cab of their pickup trucks, because there's no housing. That is a severe, severe problem. And we've got to get on with addressing these issues.
Hello, Kevin. Thanks for coming down. SACPA. I have a brief preamble to my question, just to frame it for you. My name is James Moore. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
North American Competitiveness Council met in Banff, secret meeting in September. They presented their initial recommendations on February 23rd in Ottawa to Condoleezza Rice, Peter McKay, Gordon O'Connor, Michael Chertoff. This group, in January of 2006, working oil sands group met in Houston. That was where the number 5 million barrels a day first appeared. And the question is, when we look at what's happening now in the oil sands at 1 million, mm-hmm. we've got Saskatchewan government asking about the acid rain affecting their boreal forest. We've got the Norwegian, or rather the Northwest Territories talking about the river levels.
Mm-hmm.
The pressure from the Security and Prosperity Partnership, the North American Competitiveness Council, they've already basically said, we want 5 million. And the Alberta government has said, we had no plan.
Yeah.
Mr. Stalmacher says, we have no brakes. And what we're looking at right now, you know, because of what you said about the royalties, is just this huge rush mm-hmm. of oil that all the pipelines are going south, ending in the south and not coming back. You know, this is more of an international issue, I think, than an Alberta issue, but I would really like you to spend a little bit of time talking about, you know, what you see there and what you think
sure.
you might be able to do about
sure.
it.
Sure. Well, I think everybody probably understands that Alberta's oil sands are the largest available oil reserve in the world that is still open to major investment, and it's a huge. It's politically stable. I think it's too politically stable. I wouldn't mind a little change once in a while. It's a joke, people. Come on. But it's drawing huge attention, and it's and the Americans have caught sight of this, the Chinese, the Indians, all, you know, Europeans. So the pressure's on us, but we need to remember it is our resource. It's ours to control. We own it. It's not going to go anywhere. It's not going to dribble into Saskatchewan or BC or something like that. In my view, it should be developed, but it needs to be developed with a plan. And we need to ask ourselves some questions. How much development do we want? How much can our water system accommodate? How much can the airshed accommodate? What are we doing to our land? Those are all issues. What are the direct and indirect opportunities? Because these are great jobs, in terms of at least of paying. But what are the direct and indirect costs? What's the cost to small business or to non-oil sector businesses, wherever Bev is? Anyways, when they can't be out there paying $120,000 a year to staff, and they have to close down because they can't do that. So there's all those trade-offs. And as the Tories have said, they've had no plan, and Ed Stelmach has said, we're going to leave it to the market to determine. What I would like to do is actually have that plan. To say, okay, here's the resource. We understand what our water and rivers can do. We understand what our air can do. We want this number of plants at this level of production, and here's how we will develop it. And instead, things are totally turned around. So we go out and say, how do you want it developed? As if we didn't own it. So it's time for a plan. It's time to take control. Do I want to slam the brakes on? No. Do we want to have a moratorium that freezes development? No. In my view, going from the pace we have now to a moratorium and a halt is one extreme to the other. But do we need to slow things down? Do we need to stretch out the approval processes? Yes, we do. Okay, thank you.
Well, in some ways, your answer to James's question has partly answered mine. I'm involved in environmental... Cheryl Bradley. And I'm involved in environmental issues a fair bit, and I'm starting to believe that for our government knows the price of everything and the value of nothing.
Right.
And we have situations where we've got sage grouse populations that are crashing, and yet we have energy people come to meetings to plan for the future of these birds saying, well, you know, if you don't allow us to put a well within a certain distance of the left, this is so many million dollars mm-hmm. that we lose to the provincial economy. Or you have the government wanting to do coal bed methane development in a protected area, the Muncie Natural Area.
Yeah.
And you argue, this isn't right. And the response is, well, I mean, there's so many million dollars of revenue that
right.
we can get from this. Or you have landowners in the foothills, the Southern Foothills Study, mm-hmm. who want to do some land use planning, and you
yeah.
have governments saying, well, we really don't have a context for you to do that.
And
so my question is, having set that context, is what have you done any thinking about the planning tools or the processes
yeah.
that you would use to start to make some of these decisions that consider other values?
Yes,
the energy
very much.
Price.
Yeah, yeah. And I think you're right. We know too often that you know the price of everything and the value of almost nothing. And so the Rumsey area, which is one of the last large, relatively untouched areas of parkland southeast of Red Deer, has been opened up to gas drilling. And we've raised that concern in the legislature. One of the things we've proposed is that Alberta desperately needs a land use plan. And what this amounts to in some ways is taking the province and saying, in these areas, this is okay. And in those areas, that's not okay. And actually determining in this great big sandbox of ours who can play where and who can't. And that will involve at times saying, for example, in the Rumsey area, sorry, maybe there's a lot of gas under the ground, but it's going to have to stay there because we're not going to allow drilling in that area. And we all have some magnificent examples of how important that is in Alberta in the national parks. Who would want to sacrifice what's been done in Waterton or Banff or Jasper? Nobody. And we should be building on that kind of a model. Clearly, the petroleum sector, as I said, it's half of our economy, half of the jobs, half of the government revenues. It is our golden goose, and we don't want to kill it, but we need to, you know, we need to keep that sector from consuming our entire province. So that's one example. There's no plan for managing urban sprawl on a provincial basis. There's conflicts between agriculture and industry, between town and city and county on land use. There's a very, very serious crisis in this province because there's no land use strategy. 18 months ago, the Alberta Liberals came forward with quite an extensive discussion paper on the need for a land use strategy. These are issues that to so many Albertans are glaringly obvious, and yet somehow to a provincial government that's been there for 36 years, they're too tired to get it anymore.
Hi, my name is Nadia Campbell, and I would like to ask you, what are your plans to get elected to so that you can put in some of these wonderful statements that you've been telling us. And I'm thinking along the lines that we need to have a vision and perhaps maybe three things that you will really pursue or push to the public. And I think one should be the perhaps getting rid of the deregulation of our utilities that we have within this province, because I think everyone, whether they're PPs, NDP, Green, or Liberal, would like to see happen. And I think we need to work towards getting elected rather than just, you know, coming and visiting and saying all these things, because we need to get everybody rallied to do something so we can get this.
Thank you, Nadia. Well, the essential question was, how do we go about changing government in Alberta? And it's obviously not an easy thing, or would happen more often. You need to be over the age of 72 now to have lived through more than one change of government in this province. I was at a citizenship ceremony in Edmonton. I'll come to your point in a minute, Nadia. It's just too good a story. It's about 6 weeks ago, and these are very, very moving, very emotional, where immigrants become Canadians. They come from all over the world, and I ended up chatting with a Polish fellow. And he said, you know, it won't be long before the Tories in Alberta have been in power longer than the communists were in power in Poland. And he's right. That's the scary thing. He's right. So what are we doing? Well, we're working very hard. We have MLAs traveling around the province. I'm on the road almost all the time. We are holding the government to account, as I said, raising the issues, whether it's the drilling in the Rumsey Wilderness, whether it's healthcare issues, road issues, whatever the issue, we hold the government to account, but we're also working very hard to roll out constructive alternatives, affordable housing, land use, health policy, child care policy. Those are just off the top of my head, some that we've come out with recently. We need people. We need the people of this province to decide that what's going on in Alberta is not good enough. That for the richest jurisdiction in the world, having to sit 12 and 14 and 24 hours in an emergency room is inexcusable. For the richest jurisdiction in the world to not put 2 cents into a school lunch program for hungry kids is inexcusable. We need the people of this province to decide it's time for a change. I don't know how Bridget and I, and I know Paul, by the way, is Paul still here? Sorry, shoot, I didn't realize earlier Paul Hinman was here. But he's working as well for a change of government, not quite the same direction we are, but we need the people of this province to politically decide, politically wake up to the opportunities that are being lost. We're working so hard to get our message out. And you know what? It's starting to work. In the last election, we got 30% of the popular vote province-wide. The Alberta Liberals got 30%. That's a very strong base to work on, and I can feel the public mood opening to change. There's no magic solution. It's hard work, but we are making headway.
Hi, Kevin.
Hi, Val.
My name is Val Bura, and thanks for coming to Lethbridge, and especially to take part in an open forum like this. And this is the base of democracy. You talked about the four things. Money, the root of all evils.
I think it's actually the love of money is the root of all evils.
Yeah, that's where we are.
It's an important difference.
And
there.
The second thing, people are the, you know, the solution for everything.
Mm-hmm.
And we have environment. If we don't have environment, we don't have anything.
Right.
This is my question about environment.